This is James Newberry, and I'm here with Ms. Pearl Freeman on Thursday, February 6, 2020, at her home in Marietta. And Ms. Freeman, I want to thank you for allowing me to sit down with you today. Do you agree to this interview?
Absolutely.
Thanks so much. Could you tell me your full name?
My full name is Willie Pearl Riley Freeman.
And what's your birth date?
6/15/48.
Where did you grow up?
Here in Marietta, Georgia, 618 Wright Street.
Tell me your parents' names.
My mother's name was Pearlie Mae Martin Foster. Walker Foster was my stepfather, and Grant Riley was my biological father.
So what did your parents do for a living?
My mother was a homemaker, and my dad was a concrete worker. Both of them basically did concrete work.
And you mentioned that your mother did work at Lockheed.
She worked for, ARA, who was the food service out of Lockheed, mm-hmm. and she worked there 36 years. Yeah. In the bakery.
Okay. Do you have siblings?
I do. One brother, Johnny Martin, and one sister, Clara Foster. Yes.
So you mentioned Wright Street. Can you tell me what that part of the city is called?
It was called Louisville.
Okay.
Yeah, Wright was called Louisville.
And at that time, when you were very young, as a child, what was life like in your community there in Louisville?
That's funny that you ask. I don't remember us having a lot. We didn't have what you call a parks and recreation area. It was just a wide open field, and there were swings down there. We played baseball down there. Cafes was on one end of Maple Street, and basically it was just a community that we just kind of went from house to house, you know, and played. It was funny, when I was a child, when I heard the word ghetto, I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know that we were class living below the poverty level. Because we ate every day, and we lived in a house, and we weren't in the project, so, you know.
Did you hear that word when you were a child?
I did, but I didn't know what it meant.
And who would you hear it from?
Just people talking. I remember in the late 50s, probably, when I began to notice urban renewal was going to come through, and they were going to take the black people's houses. So blacks were being displaced, and they were just going all over Marietta. And my mother was just smart enough to take what she got out of her house, and she built us a little house out on Chestnut Hill Road in Marietta. Yeah.
What age were you at that point?
I think I was about 12 years old when we moved, because I remember my 13th birthday party. We had the Chestnut Hill Road.
So, do you remember any significant changes in your life, in your daily routine after that move?
You know, I don't. By then, I'm in school. Even though school buses ran, my mother always carried us to school in her car. And she would probably, I don't remember she had a cab to pick us up. But when we moved to Chestnut Hill Road, I do remember riding the bus back home back in those days. But no, I don't think I noticed or suffered a lot of change, because I was always active in school. I was in everything, and I was always kind of a carefree person. I never got caught up in a lot of the hoopla and stuff was going on. You just hear the older people talking about discrimination and racism, but as a child, that may not necessarily have meant anything to you. You know, it was just adult talk.
Well, and you've talked a good bit about your mother, and can you describe the type of woman she was, her personality?
My mother was probably one of the strongest women I know. She had three of us, and I can remember one point in her life, she worked three jobs in one day. Just to make it. She worked for a man named Mr. Ward Watkin at that time. And when she would go to work, she would carry us. She had a daughter named Nancy. I clearly remember one of them. And we would ride their horses and just have fun. And if she need be, she'd have a cab to pick us up, to take us where we need to go. And Mom just worked real hard and worked in the church and tried to provide the best living that she could for her children. Yeah.
What church?
She went to Wright Street Baptist Church. And we live right next door to the church.
Okay.
As a matter of fact. Yeah. Yeah.
And is that where you went all through your childhood years?
Until we were displaced. I believe we moved to Chestnut Hill Road in 1961, 62. And then when we had to move, that's when we moved out to Chestnut Hill Road.
Did you go to a different church at that point?
No.
Stayed there.
She died in 1989, and she was still a member of Wright Street. I wasn't. I left there when I got married in 1966.
And went where? What church?
A Greater Community Church of God in Christ on 406 Rothel Street. Back then it was called Avery Street. Again, a renewal came through, and Avery Street had to be relocated, and they were in what you call Baptist Town.
Right.
So the church was relocated over to the corner of, at that time, it was called Page Street. Now it's called Marietta Parkway. And now the church is not there anymore. They've torn it down since that time. So that group of people, we left and we moved to 406 Rother Street. So now we're known as Greater Community Church of God in Christ.
I see. But, and your mother, what did she want for her children? Did she ever voice that, her expectations?
She would always tell us, I want you all to have a better life than what I have. And for my sister and I, she would... If we were disobedient, if we got whippings, and she would always tell us, I want you all to be the best wives you can be. I discipline you because you need to know how to do this, that, or the other. And one of her favorite sayings to us was, your word is your bond. That's all you have. So do what you say you're going to do and mean what you say. That was very strong with her. Keep your word. She was a disciplinarian. She didn't believe in being late. She believed in getting there before time or absolutely on time. Yeah, she was something. Very comical. The things that she would say would just be so funny. Mm-hmm. But she was just, Mom was just, she's a good person.
Well, tell me about your early education. Where did you start school?
I started school on Lemon Street, first grade elementary. And I stayed at Lemon Street until they built the school in Louisville. I think they call it Wright Street. And I think I went to school over there for a year. And I don't remember if the class changed or what happened, but I only remember going over there maybe a year. By then, of course, urban renewal has come through and all that's torn down, the school is built. And I can't remember what year that was, but I do remember going there, I know, for a year. Then I went back to Lemon Street. To high school, of course, because back in those days, Lemon Street was the only black high school that we had. Kids were bussed in from Kennesaw, Atworth, Smyrna, Powder Springs, from everywhere, because that was where we had to go.
And you mentioned your mother dropping you off, usually. Did you ever carpool as you got older? How did that change?
No, we never did carpool. Mom always carried us when my cousin... who's deceased now, Tommy Zachary. When Tommy turned 16, he got a car, and we would ride to school, back and forth to school with him, or at least ride back in the evenings with him from school. Mm-hmm. But my mom always carried us to school. If I got on the bus, it was because I chose to.
Okay. But, can you tell me about... Okay, so let's go back to Lemon Street Elementary. This was still a fairly new school, built in 51?
Yeah. It was, I don't know what year it was built, but I know I started first grade there, and I was born in 48.
Okay.
So I started first grade there, and we used to go to the lunchroom. I remember the Mother Porter, and we called her Mother Porter, Miss Porter, Miss Wise, people that worked in the lunchroom. And I remember when they built the annex part back in the back right. of the elementary school. And that's where we went until, you went there until you were in high school, and then that's when you went across the street once you went into the ninth grade.
Okay. So I've been in the building once, but and so I'm familiar with the layout, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the layout of the school, where the administrators were, everything.
As you when you walk in the front door, to the left was the principal's office, and at that time, Mr. Woods was our principal. And then over to the right was the library. And then you, as you go down the hall, it was just different classrooms for different teachers on both sides. And then there was, as you go down the hall on the left side, there was the girl and boys bathroom, and then classrooms all the way down till you got to the end. When you got to the end of the building and you went out, that's when you went into the annex, the long part that I think they're either tearing it down now or they've torn it down.
Right.
Yeah. But the lunchroom, if you took the left hall and went down, because that was the opening, classrooms were down through there also. And all the way down there were just classrooms on each side. And then at the very end was the lunchroom.
Right. Did you take your lunch?
No. No, we didn't take lunch. I ate lunch at school.
Do you remember what was served?
Sure. We had stuff like, the rolls was always delicious. At least you thought so. And we might have maybe pork and beans and maybe hot dogs. Or sometimes maybe a sandwich or I don't remember chicken or anything like that. That's about all I remember with the food. But yeah, we had lunch at school. I did anyway. And back then, I can remember, I think your parents had to, I don't know if we had to pay for the lunches. Seemed like we did because seemed like some schools were on, some kids were on a program whereby if they couldn't pay, they could get on a certain kind of a, now they call it the Pell and all that kind of stuff, but I don't remember none of that. Yeah, I hate school, lunch at school.
Yeah, you mentioned some students not being able to pay. Did you notice or observe differences in class among your fellow students?
You know what? I didn't. I didn't because back then, to me, teachers, it was more than about education. They also tried to give you life skills, things that would help you even when you left school, even in the early age. I remember in our health class, we had a class back then, was in the health class, and they would teach you more about your physical, your hygiene, da 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 da, and things that would help you as you migrate through life that maybe some kids weren't getting at home. I don't remember running into kids that seemingly thought they were better or there was any inequities. I can remember when we would open up our school book sometime and we would see that the school books was already written in or somebody's name was in them. And that's when I remember learning that, okay, so we got the hand-me-down from the white school. These were not new books. Well, I don't remember, very rarely we got new books. They were from leftover.
Yeah. And was that, I mean, did you say, okay, well, let's use them, whatever, or did you think, well, that's, I mean, how did you feel about that?
James, you know what? I don't know that I understood racism as being such a negative. It's just whatever the teacher presented to you, you learned it. And I don't remember hearing them be disgusted that our children got the hand-me-downs. That might have been the talk among the adults, but we didn't get it. I was always such a, my opinion of me was a happy-go-lucky kid that got along with everybody, whether they were white, black. I just don't remember getting into all of that. So I didn't know how to feel different about it. When I probably really came into, I knew that there were differences. I knew that we could not just go to any store or go to any games. And I remember when my cousin Tommy had a friend. They lived Chestnut Hill Road was back in there was sort of affluent people began to move over there. And Tommy had a friend whose father was a doctor. And they were just a very, he was white, And they were the very best of friends. And I can remember when that young man, I don't remember his name, nor his parents' name, but I can remember when he got so angry with his father, and he made this comment like, and you taught us to think that we were better than anybody else. And so that was like, oh, wow, something is really wrong, you know. But here again, I never got in a fight with white kids. I never wanted to hurt anybody. I'm a kind of person, I have to bring closure to things or try to rationalize and figure it out and then move on and then understand that we're just different. And if it don't work, it just didn't work. A lot of people didn't take that same position. It was different, but it didn't rest on me like that. I knew my limits. I knew my boundaries. My mother was protective of us. Like I said, she worked for white people that seemed to care for her, and they accepted her children. Because my sister and I played many days with Mr. Watkins' children. So, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. What kind of a student were you academically?
Academically, I think I could have been better. played a lot, around a lot. Probably could have been an A, B student, but I was probably a BC.
I mean, what were you like thinking down the road? Like as you progressed through your grades, what were you thinking after high school?
All my life, I wanted to be a nurse. All I ever wanted to do was take care of people. And I don't know where I developed that from. I still do at 71 years old. I still try to help take care of people. But some kind of way I ended up in the business world. And but I was going to go to school. That's what I said. I was going to go to school. And I wanted to be a registered nurse. And I wanted to work in the hospital. So my first real job was, back then they called them nurses assistants. A nurse's aide. Mm-hmm. So I was the nurse's aide when I was like 15, 16 at Kenistone Hospital. Mm-hmm. Back then they had what they called G-section. And G-section was for black, colored only. Mm-hmm. And they would take you to surgery, do the surgery, whatever, but they brought you back to where we were separated. Yeah.
And was it like a all-black staff in G-section as
yes,
well?
Yes, sir.
So there was no white staff in G-section?
It was white doctors.
Okay.
The doctors were white. We had a very few. We had a Dr. Brown, a Dr. Hopper. We had a few black doctors that worked up on Lawrence Street at that time. But now whether they were on staff up there and all that, I don't remember that. But I don't remember any black doctors.
Do you know Dr. Weddington?
Absolutely.
Can you tell me about him?
I didn't know him personally. I went to school with Dr. Weddington's brother's children. I can't remember her name. That escaped me. But anyway, they lived up on Lawrence Street. And her name was Patricia Weddington. And I think he had a son named Coma Weddington. But like I said, I think Dr. Weddington was their uncle. Mm-hmm. So knowing Dr. Weddington personally, I did not.
Okay. And he didn't operate out of the hospital at all?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. But I'm not sure.
Okay.
That would be I'll tell you, Eartha Head could tell you that.
Okay.
Or had you asked Ms. Clara Jenkins, she could tell you that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
So can you talk a little bit about extracurricular activities at school?
Oh, Lord, I was in everything. I was a cheerleader, and I was a majorette, and I was in the glee club, singing the choir. I think I was in the drama club. You know how kids would just get in everything.
And most of this was across the street at the high school.
That was at the high school, okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you remember a hobby fair?
I do remember us having a hobby fair. I remember us having a May Day. Do you remember May Day?
I've heard every single person has mentioned it.
Huh?
Every single person I've talked to has mentioned
May Day. Oh, May Day. May Day was like, they would put a pole, real tall pole, and on the pole they would have all these strings, and the string came down, and we would plait the pole. Mm-hmm. We would plait the maypole, and they taught you how to go in and out and go in and out and go in and out until you got down. It was totally plaited. Yeah.
And, I mean, that's an old sort of festival, May Day festival. What did it mean to the kids on Lemon Street? Because everybody has mentioned it.
For us, it was fun. It was activity. It was, I guess you might even want to say it was creativity, because we didn't know. But we just knew when May Day come, we were going to get to go out there and plant the maypole and play and have fun.
It was just a celebration.
It was just a celebration. The history behind it, I don't know that I ever really understood it.
But for the Lemon Street High School, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
The hobby fair, there's tons of photos, lots of documentation, but people don't mention it as much.
Really?
What are your memories of that, if at all?
I don't remember. I don't remember too much about the hobby fair. I really don't.
So, you mentioned being a majorette and I assume attending all the football games.
Oh, yeah.
There are several
basketball
championships when you were in high school.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about those and what it did to the school.
Football season, when it was time to go back to school, you start getting, your mom start buying you little stuff, you get ready, because we went back to school in September. Labor Day, we were always out of school for Labor Day. And it seems like the football season actually opened that Friday after Labor Day or something like that. And it was just, football season to me was one of the highlights of the school. I can remember going to championships. I can remember Jackie Menifee, Roosevelt Phillip, David Bates, Selma Freeman, because Oscar was older than I am, my husband, so that was back then, but those ones, Larry Rosser, oh my God, the list just goes on and on and on. And I remember we won the championship one year, and I think we went down to Moultrie, Georgia, and I can remember we beat them, and I still, every now and then, it's funny, because you go different places and run people, they say they from Moultrie, and we like, oh yeah, we remember when we beat you. So we still had the little rivalry thing.
Right.
As a few weeks ago, I run into some people that was down there, and I remember we won the game, and Coach Adger and Mr. Wilkin, because they would take us down on the bus, and I remember when the game was over, the kids were so upset, they start rocking. They start throwing rocks, and we had to run. We literally had to run to get on the bus.
That was the championship.
Yeah, that was championship game. Good. James Bennett. And people like James Bennett, I bet you he got so many articles on Lemon Street, you wouldn't even you'd be surprised. But they Manuel Grady, oh my God. It was so many of them. It was the highlight of the school year. The football team was awesome. Basketball, I just went to the basketball games because it was just activity. It was something to do. But I never really was good at sports like that.
But you were a majorette.
I was a majorette.
So was that every halftime?
We performed every halftime.
Okay.
And then we also did a homecoming, where you select the homecoming queen, and we always did a parade, and we would march around the square, and from Lemon Street to the square, maybe down Church Street back, maybe all the way out to Ross Street. I forgot what we broke up at now. I'm old. I can't remember all that.
Well, was that an exclusively Lemon Street parade?
That was exclusive Lemon Street.
Okay. And
because you know what was strange to me? I can remember, I don't remember what grade I was in, but I had to be in high school. And I remember all the white kids, especially the football team kids, they would come over, and segregation was alive and well at that time. They were not allowed to come into our games, and we weren't allowed to go to theirs. But they would come, and they would stand on the peripheral of the football field and watch us play. Mm-hmm. And with the wall being so high up here, Marietta High, where you couldn't see over the wall to see them play, but they would come and watch us sometime play.
What did you think about that?
That's when I guess I knew something was awfully wrong. Because I think racism is taught. I don't think kids are... You're not born knowing you're black or you're white. That's not a birth thing. Those differences are taught. And sometimes it's verbal and sometimes it's people's behavior. I can remember being in a grocery store once, and this little white girl was in a buggy with her mother. And I was just teasing and playing with her. And the little girl kept saying something. And I wasn't sure what she was saying. I thought she was really playing back with me. And her mother was laughing under her breath, trying to hold herself. And when she pushed the little girl away, it wasn't that she was so much trying to push her away from me because I was black. She pushed her away from me because the little girl was constantly saying, "Mommy, that's a nigger." And when her mother realized that I finally caught it, she just quickly pushed her on. But I thought, man, that's what they're teaching that kid at home.
When was that?
Oh, I was grown then. I was grown and married then.
Okay.
My children were babies then. But, you notice differences and you process it. You try to deal with it the best you can, but you try to make the wisest decision that you can make to not let negativity rest on you. Because if you do, it'll eat you up.
Right.
You have to. I remember when Dr. King was killed. Oh, my God. That was a horrific time. I can remember Baptist Town. They said it was just not a good place to be. People were so angry, but they weren't just angry in Marietta. It was all over, everywhere, all over the country. And I remember they set cars on fire and just, they were just angry, just so bitter and so angry at what happened and the way it happened and just accepting the fact that it shouldn't have happened like that.
Were there voices of calm in the community?
You know what? I would like to think that it was so much fear. You probably didn't know what to expect next. So if you knew that a riot was going on in a certain area, you just stayed out of it. You just kind of stayed the place of peace. Again, I was, had just been married 2 years when that happened. Was it 2 years? 6 days when we died, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had just been married not quite 2 years, and maybe 2 years, and it was just, my husband was very much involved into civil rights at that time. He was, in my opinion, a very calm kind of guy that tried to process and think about the better outcome than just, you know, but it was just shocking. I can remember he wanted my son, our oldest son at that time, to be very involved in a part of the celebration, the process. He wanted them to understand and to know what was going on. I can remember when Travis was little and my mom carried him into one of the Dunaway drugstore, one of the drugstores. And she said this man came by, and it was a white man. He patted Travis on the head and said, "How you doing, little boy?" And my son spoke up and said, "My daddy said, nobody calls me a boy." And it was just shocking to my mother that Travis was that bold, but he was listening to what his father had taught him. But at that time, the ice had been broken, and there was so much going on to try to level things back out and bring about some peace. So, you know, you suffer these things, and racism was alive and well, and you listen to black people talk, you listen to white people talk, and you realize that while maybe I had envy and viciousness in my heart, you didn't. Or maybe you didn't feel the way your parents taught you. It's just an environment, and it was a time in life. It was a process that we just had to work to get to where we are. Even though things still happen now that shouldn't happen. But life is just, it's challenging. But you got to apply wisdom and think about what you do and think about what you say. Because it'll follow you.
I want to sort of come to the time when you met your husband. I assume you were still in high school or just finishing up?
I was finishing up.
Okay.
I actually met him in 1965. His father, Oscar Freeman, was a cab driver. He owned his own cab company. And he had come home from service from France. Those are pictures that you saw there. To his sister Joyce's graduation. And she graduated on a Thursday, and their father fell dead Monday morning. Mm. And they buried him sometime later that week. I don't remember what day. And I went to the funeral service, and I actually met him that day. and not knowing that it would grow into a relationship. The next year, I graduated and should have been going off to college, but I got married. 1966.
So you were planning to go to college or thinking?
I was thinking I was going. I actually thought I was going to go to University of Chicago because I have family live up there. And I met Oscar and, oh, well, that didn't happen.
Now, tell me again why you were at the funeral.
I went to the funeral because I was best friends with Oscar's sister, Joyce.
Okay, so you already knew her.
I knew her. Okay. Yeah, we were friends in school. Okay. We were majorettes and cheerleaders together.
Did you know he existed?
I think I knew of him. I probably even tried to call him, seemed like friends of mine from Rome, because we played Rome, Georgia, for basketball. And my cousins that lived up there would come down and bring girls with them. Mm-hmm. And I think one of them had me to call Oscar one day for her. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't want from a can of paint. So I called. I did. I called them. And but I mean, I never knew I would get to know him or anything about him.
Well, and
I don't even think I realized that was Joyce's brother.
Well, that's my question. If you were close, maybe you had seen him at their house.
I had never seen him. I didn't know. I mean, I knew she had a brother. But when I met her, he was stationed in Paris.
Okay.
He had been stationed there for 3 years. So when I met her, he was just a picture on the dresser. I never had any idea that I would ever get to even know him.
And where did he grow up in Marietta?
Over on Fort Hill Homes.
So in the
You know, we're Louisville, we're Baptist Town, and we're Fort Hills. You know that, don't you? Mm. Yeah. Okay, well, he was born in Fort... Well, I don't know that he was born. I actually think he was born up here right off the square in what they call Happy Flat at that time. But anyway, he was raised over on Fort Hill Home area.
So he was in the area. He was not in the projects. He was in.
They lived in the projects. Yes, they did.
Okay, in those homes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is where he grew up from birth to like high school age.
Yeah, so he graduated from high school.
Okay. Yeah. And did he come all the way up through the Lemon Street schools?
Yes.
Because they're right there next door.
Yes.
Okay.
And oh, they were right there in the project. All they did was walk down the street and cross the street.
Yeah, that's a short,
they were school
short
yeah.
trip.
Yeah.
And his father was Oscar Sr. And what was his mother's name?
Lillian Freeman.
Okay.
Lillian Jennings Freeman.
And he had a sister. Did he have any other siblings?
Yeah, he had Mary Emma, Annie Ruth, who was Mickey. He had Barbara Joe, who we call Barbara, and he had Joyce. Those were his four siblings.
And what can you tell me about his family?
His family was very loving, very caring. His mother was the one that really led me to the Lord. She's the one that taught me about the Word of God. Very sweet. Mother was a seamstress. She could sew anything. She could take a newspaper and make a pattern. She was just that good. Very, very, very creative. Joyce was very athletic. Mirama, the oldest one, was a musician. Mickey was a singer. And Barbara was a school teacher. Yeah. Yeah.
And how did your husband make the decision to join the military?
I don't know.
You know,
I think I heard the story that he was talking to a cousin of his and asking, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm getting ready to go in the Air Force. And he said, oh, how are you going to do that? And he said, well, I'm going downtown. I'm going to learn. And I'm going to join. And he said, I am too. So they left here together, going to military in early 60s, something like that. Yeah.
Had he done any other work or attended any college after high school?
He did. He went to Leo College while he was in the military. He took quite a few courses because he was, that F-22 fighter plane was his plane out there at Lockheed. So he was a proper administrator for the government. Yeah, he was constantly in and out of classes all the time.
And how long would he be in the military overall?
The total time was 25 years. 25 plus few months over. He did 4 years, either 4 years or 6 years active, and the rest of it was the reservist. He went back and stayed there until he got his his plaque and stuff is out there in the hallway.
So when you married, was he back permanently from France?
Yes.
Okay.
He got out in 19... He actually came out in, I think it was March of 1966.
And then when did you marry?
We got married September 18th, 1966.
And where did you marry?
Marietta, Georgia.
What? Was it a church or a home?
No, we met one of the elders' homes. Yep, we did. I don't remember, just all I know was on Henry Drive.
And then where did you live after you married?
We lived on Lawrence Street for about 2 months. And after that, we bought a house in Smyrna. We moved to Louisville, back over where I was born and raised. And we lived there about 2 years, not quite 3 years. Then we bought our first home in 1970 in Smyrna. We stayed down there 8 years. We came back to Marietta and lived up by Spurber High School for 27, 28 years, something like that.
So that was your long-term home.
That was our long-term home. We left there, and we moved to West Marietta, and we lived over there. I did for almost 13 years. He only lived 2.5 years after we moved over there. He passed. We moved there in 2005, and he passed away in 2007. He got sick in 2008, and he died March 2009.
When he would have been about 70.
He would have been 70 his birthday.
Okay. And he was on reserves for most of that time in the military. Did he do other work?
Oh, my God. Most of it was over. He used to say, two things that happened to me, the greatest thing that happened to me. He said, giving my life to the Lord and joining the military. He loved his military training. He loved his military life. He was a master sergeant, and he would go do his UTA in some foreign country every year, and he loved it. He loved foreign travel. I have so many stories, and we have so many pictures. Oh my God!
Did you travel with him?
No, because it was military training. Usually they were gone like 7 to 14 days, depending on where they had to go. There were few times he thought he was going to be deployed back to active duty because of the Vietnam War and all this stuff was going on, but thank God that never happened. But that was the, and he finally retired out of, he finally gave that up in, I don't know what year it was, but I think he, when he turned 60 years old was when he, I think you got to come out when you're 60, something like that. But anyway, that was the highlight of his life. He loved foreign travel, loved foreign country history.
Well, and you were raising how many children?
Three.
Okay, and also working.
Absolutely. I worked for the City of Maryland for 33 years almost, like in 4 months.
Okay, so you had worked as a nurse's assistant at Kennestone.
Oh, but I only did that in high school.
Okay.
And that was just to help my mother pay for my graduation.
So then when did you start working for the city?
I started working for the City of Marietta in 1974, and I stayed there until 2000. When did I leave? 2006, I think.
Did you do for the city?
I was the tax manager, tax collector.
All during that time?
For the first 10 years, I was on the BLW side. I worked in customer service, and then the city manager had me to transfer to the city side. And that's when I became the supervisor and manager of the tax department, and that's what I've done for 23 years, I think. Send out property taxes all over City of Marietta, collecting funds.
Can you tell me how your husband became involved in the NAACP?
He told me 1980, 81, he felt impressed with the Lord, he said, to come back and help his people. And he wanted to help build the membership in the NAACP. So he got involved in community things, and he said that the membership was very low. And I think he started out with about 42 people, I think it was. and he took it from 42 people up to around 400 something people just in 2 years, and most of it was footwork. He was a foot soldier. Oscar was a very jovial guy, very spirited, energetic person that everybody liked him. Well, everybody don't like everybody, but you know what I mean. He got along with people, and so he was able to just really rapidly help to bring some life back to the NAACP. He enjoyed his work very much. He started the Freedom Fund Banquet that they still have now. Back then, he opened the first NAACP office, which was Winston Strickland owned the building down on Lemon Street. And he gave him a small area there for an office there. And he stayed there until we found the location where they are to this day, over on Roswell Street.
What is the Freedom Fund Banquet?
The Freedom Fund Banquet is an annual fundraiser that they do for the operations to take care of the rent. You know, things got to be paid. But it's an annual fundraiser to support the finances of the organization.
And in addition to increasing membership in Marietta, did your husband have other objectives?
It did. They had an advocacy program where they would go out and try to help people get jobs. They also had a veterans affairs group that they had. They also had, I'm trying to think who was over Minority Affairs. That might have been under Kennesaw College, though, the Minority Affairs group. But I remember there was a group, I forgot what they called them, that would go into the schools, children that were having problems, children that felt that they were being, racism was alive, they were being treated unfairly. It was very busy. I remember they signed the first fair share agreement with the city of Marietta. Back in those days, Jack Crane was the city manager at that time. And what that simply said was, Benjamin Hooks, who was the national president at that time, they signed along with them. And basically what it was saying was that you agreed that you would hire qualified minorities into your corporation or into your business. Just give them a fair share. That's all they wanted was a fair share. Because things were not as fair then as they are now. So they were fighting for freedom. They were fighting for equality.
So how long was he, and this work with NAACP was on top of his career in the military?
Absolutely. And his job.
Okay. And his job being?
His job was now at Lockheed.
And what did he do at Lockheed?
DOD. He was a property administrator for the government.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So he had a lot going on. were both of you sort of comfortable being busy?
He was very comfortable because he was passionate. He felt like it was just really a call on him to do it. And not only that, I think Oscar saw the need. There were so many things that just needed to be handled. He worked along with Hugh Grogan, Deanne Bonner, who is still involved now. She was involved, and so it was just such a need. You had Winston Strickland, James Dodd, James Goldberg. It was just so many people that was involved in trying to just level the playing field and to make things right.
Mm-hmm. When you think about the Marietta of your childhood and the Marietta today, taking into account the schools, the integration of the schools, you know, your husband's work in the NAACP, how do you think the community has changed?
You know, James, I would like to say that it has changed for the better, even though we still have some issues merging things and leveling them out and making them fair. What does change look like? We have better schools. Our kids get the same education that any other kid get now. But we run into some kind of way. We're running into crashes. I'm not sure it's because children are not being disciplined at home. Some of them are coming from broke-up homes, or if the home is not broken, they're not getting the training at home. It's white kids. I'm not in the school system. I can learn to talk about what you hear. But are black kids really being treated equally to how white kids are being treated? You know, you really just don't know where the problem is and what's really going on, that it can't really come together. But if you look at where we were back then and look at where we are now, we've come a long ways. Is there still room for growth? Absolutely. There's still some things that can be tweaked and changed, and how do we get there and what's going to make it better? Those are questions that you probably got to sit down with parents and school teachers and people that are directly involved in NAACP, people that are directly involved that can really put a better answer to that.
Sure.
But when you listen to the news and you hear in the community and all these things, all you're doing is really hearing information. You're not really in that. But I can just say that I think from where we were to where we are, things look better. Room for growth, I would probably say yes. I wouldn't close that door and say, oh, it's marvelous. No, I wouldn't say that.
Well, to sort of round out our conversation, I'd love to touch on the process of integration. Since this hasn't really been a linear conversation anyway, you know, from chronological, from beginning to now, I'd love to touch on integration. You graduated in 66.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the next to the last class at Lemon Street
That's
High.
The last class. Uh-huh.
Were you conscious of the efforts on the part of religious leaders, like at Zion, and then the first students making a choice to go?
I can remember when we found out that our class was the largest class, I think, that ever come from Lemon Street in 66. And I can remember when we were coming out, there was one class left behind us. And I was thinking, I'm really glad that we're getting out, that I'm getting out of here. Because I just didn't know what to expect. I'd never been taught by a white teacher. I hear kids from the North. In fact, I was talking to a lady the other day that's my age from the North, and she said, I never had a black teacher. So I thought, that's really interesting. So I can remember maybe somewhat apprehensive or fearing what would happen if I had to go to the white school. Was my level of learning going to be good enough? Was I going to pass? I just remember that I was glad that I was coming out, and I wasn't going to be the one to have to integrate, because it wasn't a good feeling. I knew the two people that integrated Merritt High School, the two females, Daphne Delp, and the other girl was Trevere Grady. And I can remember hearing about the opposition. And I can remember hearing that, I don't know what happened with Trevere. I don't know that she really went, or did she stay, or did she, I don't remember what the story was, because they were behind me. And of course, when I got out, I moved on into a Doug Hool and got married. So I don't know what was happening back there, but I can just remember being glad that I wasn't going to have to be the one to go through that.
Yeah, what do you think it was? I mean, I assume you don't know them personally, Daphne. And
Daphne Delp, absolutely.
Okay. Have you had any conversation with her? Have you talked to her? What do you think it was about her that motivated her in that direction?
You know what? I can't say that, but just talking with Daphne was a very smart girl. And I think it was just determination. And you got to think about it. When you're this age and you're trying to get through school and you have parents and you have rules and regulations and this is what they're saying that you got to do, you almost have no choice. You got to persevere and do it. And Daphne did well. I spoke with Daphne a couple of years ago, as a matter of fact. I was able to get in touch with her, and she came to the grand opening of the new park, the new water park, mm-hmm. for Elizabeth Porter.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually here in Marietta. Mm-hmm.
She's in Decatur.
She's in Decatur now, yes.
So you would say a general sense of relief to not have to be involved in that.
I was glad that I was not going to be the one that was going to have to integrate the school. I was glad. I just didn't even know how to feel. I was just like, I'm glad it's not me. But then my last year of school, I'm going to be honest with you. I was so caught up with graduation coming up and the excitement of all of that. I don't remember having any really harsh feelings. I couldn't sleep about it. It was torn because, you know, one way or the other. I just remember thinking, I'm glad I'm not going to be the one. I'm glad we're getting out in time.
Sentiments that I hear is there's a loss. There's a loss in of Lemon Street. The building is torn down.
I think I know that over the years we've talked about. I can remember when the building came down. I can remember the emotions when they tore down Lemon Street, and the old high school is dumped over there off of Fairground Street. That pit that, well, when you go turn Chapel, it's on the right-hand side. Excuse me, left-hand side. And that all that land over there where it kind of goes down, that's where the high school was dumped. I believe a man named Mr. Curtis Wigley, that was his property at that time. And I can remember people feeling, some resented, some hated, some didn't want it torn down. But let's face it, blacks had no voice and anything going on at that time. We didn't have enough guns. And when I say guns, powerful people to help step in there and say, why are you all doing this? So I wasn't involved in that arena. I wasn't out there in the community like that. So, and the building has been gone so long now. That's one thing that makes my heart so happy about the fact that even though Fort Hills has been demolished, the elementary school has been saved, and I'm very proud of Dr. Riviere's suggestions, how to make it work for everybody. I'm a little concerned. I pray that it's not going to get lost when the new administration building goes up and the replica of the old high school is there. I hope that it'll be a place of pride. And I hope that people won't be prevented from coming by a place of interest, because I think as people come back, they'll come. And we certainly, I can just about remember every classroom in Lemon Street High School. You know, when you're there and you're going to school and you're all involved. I remember the gymnasium and the stage where we went every Thursday morning for General Assembly. Well, I call it General Assembly, but every Thursday morning we all went in there and we pledged allegiance to the flag and, you know, whatever. So a lot of memories. It's a lot of memories. It's a lot of history. And I've encouraged every black person that I know, you all can't tell our history if we don't give it to you. You won't know it. So I'm encouraging everybody that I know to get involved, give you the interviews. You tell your story. Mine may be a little different from somebody else's, but we can only speak from who we are and where we are.
Would you like to add anything else before we
continue? Well, I'd like to say for me, I've been a lot of places, thanks to my husband. We've been a lot of places, and I've seen a lot of beautiful areas in my life in other states. Did a little bit of overseas traveling. But for me, I love Marietta. I've always wanted to come back home. I never really wanted to move away from here permanently. And my life and my time and my work at the city of Marietta was just something that I adored. I always got along with people. I got along with staff, all of my city managers. It's been a good life for me, and I'm grateful. I'm thankful for where I feel that the Lord has allowed me to land. So I have no regrets. If I can help anybody as I travel along, then I guess I could end by saying my living won't be in vain.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.